Okay, and welcome back. We're going to spend a half an hour with Dr. Bill Deagle to try and get you further up to speed on what's going on over there. We are finding out more and more because of the work that very honorable and brave people are doing, both journalists and non-journalists, putting this thing together from afar. We're certainly not getting the truth from the Japanese government or TEPCO. We're getting little pieces here and there. Hello, Bill. Welcome back.
Yes, welcome, Jeff. We have a short time, so I'll try to be real brief. Basically, the number is who's one of about 43 specialist engineers. It's a reactor safety engineer. And basically what's happening is they're dumping 11,500 tons of water. They also unroofed the cooling pools and building on reactor 5 and 6 to let off hydrogen, which means...
Okay, now hold on. I don't want that to go by anybody. Bill just said unroofed. What that means is, and we have no visual confirmation yet, but the reports are TEPCO has cut holes in the roofs of buildings 5 and 6 over reactors 5 and 6. That's
big
news.
Yeah, that's cooling pools to let off the hydrogen.
Right.
And we have a couple of sources of confirmation, so that's confirmed.
Otherwise, the buildings will blow like one, two, three, and four.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that actually blew up because the cooling pools. We have a number of things. Each situation is a little different. There are transient incidents of nuclear fission occurring in reactor one.
Yeah, these chain periodic chain reactions.
Right. Now, the positive things they're reporting here, and this is the IAE briefing that I just had a look at a few minutes ago. It was just updated just this evening. They're trying to say in Unit 1, the feed water nozzle of reactor pressure vessel decreased from 253 to 243. Of course, that's really hot. And the bottom of the reactor pressure vessel was down 113 Celsius. And they said the reliability of the RPV pressure indications is in question. Unit 2, the indicator temperature was, feed water was decreased from 153 to 140. And the temperature at the bottom of the RPV was not reported. Indicated drywall pressure remains at atmospheric pressure. Unit 3, the indication temperature, feed water, nozzle, RPV was 114. So what they're saying is when they pour a ton of water in, they're keeping these from blowing or going supercritical. Now, you have to remember you have what's called fuel rod bundles, and they're in these zirconium sheath bundles.
Mm-hmm.
They're dropped like little squares into the reactor pool. When they're sheathed with boron, and what happens is, if it ever goes critical, it starts to heat up, and then eventually it melts. And then you can't cool them because you have a big glob called a quorum. That glob or quorum, if it goes through the bottom of the reactor, will just keep going. That's the way they call it China syndrome, because it can go to China, although unfortunately it's next door to China, so it's not going to go there. Now, the issue is they're going to be dumping an incredible amount of radioactive water into the ocean without putting it out. They should put it to a tanker and then take it off somewhere and then probably filter it.
No, they told us that there was nothing to worry about. It was no threat to human health, so I'm
not
worried.
There's also heavy isotopes falling. If you actually look at the level of gigabecquerels of radiation they're dropping, we're looking at the isotopes 25 and 35 miles away. They're indicating isotopes that would only occur with the reactors very hot. And according to the forensics, new atomic forensics analysis, an article published by William Broad in the New York Times over the weekend, that these forensics analysis in places like Europe and Germany, here in America, and near Chicago, the summary from that article is a, you know, I've got to post it up on Clay and Iron, a Nutramedical, but a faraway lab. Basically, it's a forensic lab saying, when you get neutron beams, when you get hydrogen release, when you get this and that, this is what's going on with your reactor.
Right.
This is how much is likely to have melted down.
That's really heroic modeling they're doing from a distance, you're right.
Right. Now, once they do that, it tells you that once it forms a big glob or quorum, you can't cool it down no matter how much water you do in it. Okay.
Now, that's important. Do you hear what Bill said? It doesn't matter. They're going to ship these two concrete pumps over, convert it to spray water. It doesn't matter at some
point. Doesn't matter.
It's too late.
Yeah. Even if you're, quote, your base temperature in the area of the nozzle of the water coming back, because you don't even know if it's contiguous, if it's coming back, if it actually got to the center of the actual reactor. The other is these pools, like in reactor pool number 4, that basically is totally unroofed, so it's open to the air, and it's continuing to boil and bubble. And what they really need to do, and this was mentioned by Arne Gunderson, a former nuclear safety expert who has a YouTube clip, so I'm going to post up on Nutramedical Clay and Iron, is you have to put boron in there, things to stop the fission reaction. What they've been doing, initially they put salt water, which would have ruined any pumps even if they were working. Then they put fresh water, and then they didn't know what to do with the fresh water. Then they got a crack. They found out what the crack was. It's near the turbine building number two, in an area where the cables come in. And literally that crack opened it up so the water that was filling up this pit or trench was going directly into the ocean.
And by the way, that's small potatoes compared to what's really going on here.
Right, what's really going on, here's what's really going to happen. This is a timeline I expect, and I can't tell you what day or week it'll happen, but firstly, this is a temporizing measure to ship these two giant pumper trucks that they've modified from concrete to water. Because even if they keep the temperatures down, say, for a month or two, eventually, if they can't get new pumps in there to actually cool the reactor core, or if the core is already melted down sufficiently that you can't cool it, eventually it'll start to run away. In other words, the temperature will rise because this massive nuclear material is a big glob and you can't cool it down from external water. It'll just make more steam and vent off more radioisotopes. So that means, I predict you'll be seeing a lot more steam and isotopes, a lot more hydrogen, and if they do try to cap it off, now they're talking about wrapping these buildings, like, shrink wrapping them, and sealing them off so that they can then control what's being vented off of the buildings. Now, if they do that and they filter off the air, that's like my suggestion the other day on the program, talking about, creating some kind of a super tent over the top of them so that you could do that. But you got to make sure you don't have a hydrogen explosion, because if you seal them, you're going to have a hydrogen explosion, and then you're going to have not just little ventings, but a big explosion that'll cause a major.
There's a major argument over there about what kind of material to use, and they've been talking about making wraps, basically tents, for each of the first four buildings. They have to do all six, but you're so right. If they do put a tent over them of some kind, what are they going to do with the hydrogen?
Well, they have to have a hose or something, take the hydrogen and the radioactive materials, and as reactors get hotter, you get the lesser isotopes that come off. They're more volatile, like, you basically get lesser isotopes coming off, like cesium-137, which is volatile, and iodine-131, and then as it gets hotter, you get strontium-90 and plutonium-239, because they're less volatile. Which means that these heavier isotopes, and they've already identified heavier isotopes 25, 35 miles away, so at least one of the reactors was hot enough that it actually was venting off heavier isotopes. And so I predict that the isotope pattern is going to get into these longer-lived isotopes as this goes on. So the lesser-lived ones will be a smaller portion of the number of becquerels of radiation, and more of them will be heavier isotopes like the transuranics, plutonium, uranium, and strontium-90, which is one of the bad guys, because its half-life is 30 years, so to get rid of most of it will take 120 years plus. So, and then the bad guys, like plutonium, has a half-life of 24,500 years, so you're talking about 100,000 years for it to become non-significant. So, if this continues, they're going to create a dead zone. As I mentioned the other night, they should be... People that are in the immediate area should get tested by a doctor if they haven't left already. They should get their blood, their bone marrow banked. People in North America need to do at least two things, and I mentioned there's five areas, but two things. You should get neutrodyne and nitrotrala if you just start on those two, because the radiation is going to accumulate in you. You should seriously think about not drinking milk or start, if you're going to take something for your bones.
Right.
Yeah, you should take something like, we have a source called Bone Builder that's a biocrystalline form of hydroxyapatite from New Zealand. If you're osteoporotic or if you're a child and your bones are growing quickly, you're going to suck in this strontium-90 because we use strontium to actually strengthen bones. So it gets absorbed faster than calcium. So if your body needs calcium to grow or if you're osteoporotic, you're going to get in trouble. So you've got to protect your, with the radioiodine, it's going to increase. But we're going to start seeing increases in strontium-90, cesium-137. In an animal models, cesium-137 goes directly in mice to the breast, so we're going to see a major surge in breast cancer, and it goes.
We already don't have enough. Jeez, yeah.
Right, that's one of the major cancers. So women out there, you know, realize this is going to start bioaccumulating, and it's not a matter of I got one exposure. It's a continuous bioaccumulated exposure over months and years, and some of these isotopes will be injected into the atmosphere, and they're going to be part of our hydrological cycle for over a century.
Mm-hmm. This is, we're going to skip the break, network. Thank you. We'll just go right through. This issue of testing dairies for polluted radioactive milk, is a real problem with me. The EPA announced a dairy in San Luis Obispo, Central California, and another dairy in Washington State had tested positive for radioactivity, we assume, iodine-131, in the milk. We don't know how many dairies were tested, but I can guarantee you they didn't just test those two. There was no mention made of how many were tested and the results at any others. The supposition could logically be proffered that there were numbers of dairies tested and numbers of them came back positive for radioactive iodine in the milk. Now, we've got a mega-billion-dollar dairy business in this country. You think there's not a lot of pressure? This is a corporatocracy. This isn't a human culture. This is a culture of big business. So we're going to be hung out to dry.
Right. Now, the key is, what we need to feed these cattle, basically, is grass grown, say, under a tent or in a warehouse. Because if you feed them grass that's been salted down over a period of months and years, they're estimating they may have an ultimate solution within 2 months, and they may have it, you know, capped in, you know, say 6 months. I think what's going to happen is this is going to melt down while they're cooling it and keeping the core temperature so it doesn't have a big explosion. And if they either wrap it and seal it, they'll have hydrogen explosions. Or if they continue to melt down while they're trying to do this, they're going to end up with what we call these transient nuclear events occurring. Like,
well, they have those right now, N1.
Right.
Yeah.
And those will continue shooting a blue beam where the neutron beam is actually ionizing here, so you see blue light. That's really
those
bad.
Those are you're dead in a week or two if you're near one of those, by the way. That's not.
Well, it's the same as a neutron weapon. When a neutron bomb goes off, they've designed nuclear weapons so it just has fast neutrons. And so what happens is it sterilizes everything. In fact, if a neutron weapon, say, goes over a city, they've designed it now so it produces almost no blast. So it won't peel the paint off your walls or even set your house on fire.
No, it kills
but anything
every
in it down to cockroaches and bacteria and you. In fact, what happens is they came back to your home a week later, you'll still be sitting in your easy chair and you won't even rot because the bugs in your gut will have been sterilized to the point where you'll just get dehydrated like a cracker, but you will not blow up with gut bacteria.
Wow, a new Pompeii exhibit in 1,000 years.
Exactly. So, you know, people don't realize that it's this gradual, I call it the Chinese water torture of radioisotopes. It's not going to kill you today, but it's going to genetically injure you, and it can have transgenerational effects that will go on forever.
Well, here's another thing. As you folks listening know, you don't need cheese, milk, dairy products. You don't need yogurt. You don't need ice cream. There are substitutes for all of these things out there that are perfectly healthy for you and better for you. So I have no love lost for the dairy. Goodbye. That's fine. We don't need it. These cows give milk at such hyper levels, they just burn out after 5 years, and then they go become hamburgers from McDonald's and all the rest of them. It's a vile, ugly, inhuman business, and it needs to stop. But that's the upside on that. Now, the downside...
Yeah, the downside is very far down, isn't it? And unfortunately, the more we analyze this, the more it seems that we keep on getting new twists to this.
We don't get anything that brings us up. It keeps looking worse, and that's the truth.
Well, realism, I think, would help. First, the realistic thing is they're blacking out the news. I go on BBC News, I go on all kinds of places, and it's not easy, unless you go to the Internet and look for specific sites to really search for the news. Like even the IAEA report is a little bit more honest, but unless you have people on the ground like we do, like nuclear scientists in Japan that are reporting, or like Chris Harris, who has nuclear engineers he's in contact with in Japan, the news media are just, they're blanketing this. All you can see is everything about Al-Qaeda. You can see, I call it Al-Qaeda, which is, you know, in eastern Libya being supported by our government so they can go and whack Gaddafi.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about things that are ridiculous because...
Al-Qaeda is what it is.
Yeah, Al-Qaeda. And they talk about these things like they're important, where they're, even two of his sons are actually negotiating with the British already. It'll be back, it'll be old news. But their idea is to bury the Japanese story because they don't want Americans to freak out that, oh my gosh, we're being rained on.
Well, I got March Madness now. They're in the final game and big news. And you scan down Google News, and I've caught them 4 or 5 times in the last week. Not a single story on their entire page, between 45 and 50 headline links and stories to do with Japan. Nothing.
Yeah, and they don't talk about the fact that their current plan isn't really a plan, it's a stopgap.
They have no plan.
They don't have a plan. What they're doing is,
nothing.
Yeah, they're playing it by ear. And what they're doing now is, for example, we talked about this with Chris Harris. They could, for example, take a bunch of containers line them with, believe it or not, depleted uranium. Now, DU, when you're not burning it, is actually not very radioactive at all. You can put your hand on it. You can carry these munitions with your bare hands. They won't do much, although if you have it sitting on a munitions box, it's going to get a little warm.
You don't want to do that. No.
You don't want to do that. So the guys that I knew in Gulf One, they were told not to sit on the ammo box longer than half an hour.
They actually told them, well.
That's exactly the words they used. But the key is, if you lie into a container, you can walk down tunnels made of this stuff, and it blocks almost all the gamma radiation. That's the worst one that's coming off the reactors, because the beta particles can be stopped by paper, but the gamma will go right through everything except for something like lead or depleted uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And DU actually blocks it better, and it's lighter than lead.
Oh, it is lighter than lead. That's interesting.
Lighter than lead. So you could have DU line containers, line them up, and make a tube to go all the way down so these guys are going in there. Plus, they're wearing what's called decontamination suits. I'm looking at a picture here of these Japanese workers. They're wearing what's called decontamination suits. That's a paper throwaway that just stops particles from going on their body, but doesn't stop radiation. The Russian and Americans have radiation suits. They actually block radiation.
Well, that's why the Japanese have asked the Russians for help.
Yeah, the Japanese should have our nuclear suits.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were taking nutraceuticals like the protocol that I have on Nutramedical, they could block 95 to 98% of the radiation just by a combination of physical wearing a radiation suit, not just a paper suit, and taking internal things to block it, including these newer drugs like amifostine and ghrelin. They're actually bioengineered molecules that'll block it so their bone marrow won't go bye-bye, or they won't get so disoriented that they can't function.
Well, I got another report that there are maybe 1,000, maybe more bodies that are near the plant of people who expired in the tsunami and the quake that can't be retrieved because they're too radioactive. So.
Yeah, and they can't get people to even remove the bodies because it's so radioactive. They can't get workers willing to commit suicide by just retrieving the bodies.
Right.
And we shouldn't be asking these workers, by the way, because if we know this disaster is going to go on, let's say, 2 months or 6 months, if you expose the only, say, 300 or 400 workers that actually know the inside of this plant and how to function, you'll have funerals before you can ever use that knowledge in their heads to actually fix the plant or to actually decommission it and neutralize it.
Well, that's why Japan is beginning to reach out. They've asked the Russians for help, the Chinese for help, us for help. TEPCO is now denying that dumping 11,500
tons
of water,
11
into the ocean.
Tons.
The fishermen
they're
going to
dump out God knows how many thousand tons every day.
Well, the fishermen are angered.
Well, they should have had a boom up there at the very least and then pumped it out of there into a tank, like a tanker, like an oil tanker. Because I'm sure the oil tankers would go across.
Well, they had a barge, the tanker. They could have done something for sure.
Look, if they put it in a super tanker, they could have pumped out all that water into a super tanker.
But you made a point earlier, Bill. Excuse me, we don't have a lot of time here, but they're pumping on these buildings, maybe not all of them, but at various times, you've seen the water, and the average per day water being pumped on these buildings is, you told me, between 300 and 500 tons per building. Is that correct?
That's right. And so what will happen is you're looking at, 5,000 or 6,000 tons per day is going to go just to the ocean. So I think what they should have...
It's been going for weeks.
Right. They should have a super tanker parked off there with a hose running out to it. They should pump that water into the super tanker. They should be putting, if they're going to put a bubble wrap around these buildings, they should do it quickly and then have a hose running out to a filtration system. They should build tunnels with these depleted uranium things made of containers, and we could start manufacturing them, shipping them in ASAP in large, Hercules jets or Antonov. We should have Russian or American rad suits, and all these workers should be totally protected with nutraceuticals and radiation-proof drugs, not just screwing around with little paper suits playing around there because they're going to die. And then when we lose their knowledge of the plant, who's going to actually not try to fix it? Because
I think they should send Jeffrey Immelt over there, the CEO of GE.
Put him in a paper suit, yeah.
Yeah, let's send him over and fix it because he told us that nuclear energy was essentially safe. It had a wonderful safety record.
Well, there's no such thing as a nuclear reactor. In fact, Chris Harris has worked at this for like 40 years. He told me today, he said, we have not engineered for millennial events. We've not engineered for a Force 9 earthquake hitting New Madrid or Diablo Canyon or San Onofre where there's a subduction zone 4 miles off the coast. We've not engineered for even a station blackout where if the coronal mass ejection knocks out the power grid, and you only have 2 weeks or a month of diesel fuel on site, say, in Tennessee, That reactor, if it doesn't go immediately, will go in 2 or 4 weeks. And it'll be the same effect if it got hit with a tsunami because it's the station blackout.
I want to make another point. We're going to delay the break here a little bit, too. The map of the United States, which shows readings at a number of locations, it also you see, let's say the West Coast readings are 20, 15, 29, 31. And you go back east, and all of a sudden in Tennessee or Kentucky, where there's a nuclear power plant, it'll be 78.
Well, now, it's because all radioactive, all plants vent off tritium, thorium, strontium, etc.
On a daily basis.
On a daily basis. All of them. All. That people say, oh, no, you mean some. No, I'm going to use the word A-L-L, all. And the problem is that they all vent off, and so it's a cover for the nuclear industry. You can actually have radiation we call illness maps, where you actually go in a radial area and you'll see the rates of autism, small birth weight, prematurity, dementia, heart disease, stroke, all in radial areas directly around and downwind in a plume directly from these plants. So if you take a plume from San Onofre or Diablo Canyon and you take the prevailing winds, you can see an increase in disease directly in that plume area, and it's always been that way.
Well, if Diablo goes, it could plume right straight on down to Southern California's border with Mexico and onward and wipe out Southern Cal. That would be
very
simple to do.
Yeah.
Bill, thank you for the update and all the work you're doing.
Yeah, it's went from bad to, oh my gosh.
It did, indeed.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're asking good questions and we're getting answers that we really don't want, but people better start taking care of themselves and realizing that this is an international project. We need a Manhattan team, and we need daily reports and truth, because falseness and lies will cause more deaths from panic when people realize and radiation illness starts to strike the Japanese. Then they'll have a real mess on their hands.
All true. Thanks, Bill. Talk to you maybe next week.
Yeah, take care.